Hey, it's Glenn here. Welcome to My Millennial Money. I've got a cool interview coming up. I'm in Orlando, Florida. John and Aaron can't make it. Let's get into it.
Hey, you're listening to My Millennial Money. It's the podcast for people who are still on their parents' Medicare card, just like I am.
Well, Colin, thanks for joining me on the show today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I actually heard Colin, I think I met you at a mastermind group that we did and heard a bit of your story, and we did a presentation to the group.
Yeah.
And so the cool thing is, you're almost like a card counter.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, so when I saw you up there with the photos on the wall and all that stuff, I remember that movie 21.
Uh-huh.
So, was that accurate, that movie?
No. I mean, a tiny bit, yeah. But we actually, when that came out, we saw it opening night. I was running a blackjack team, sure. Professional blackjack team, just like in that movie, and we took everyone out to see it opening night, and then we were taking notes on everything wrong in the movie.
Wow.
And then we went home and filmed a YouTube video called The Top 10 Mistakes in 21 the Movie, and it kind of went viral. People either loved our video or hated it because we were saying, hey, yeah, card counting is real, but this movie is more Hollywood than accurate.
Wasn't Ashton Kutcher in that one?
No. No. The main character was kind of nobody.
So let's go back. So you're almost a retired card counter.
Yeah.
So 10 years ago or mm-hmm. in your prime, you made 600,000 US.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So the story is about 15 years ago, I had a math degree and was waiting tables at a restaurant.
Right.
And, I had a teacher's degree, I didn't want to teach, and a friend loaned me a book on card counting, said, hey, I'm trying to learn this, and I thought, I'm a math guy, I could probably figure out, and it really isn't more complicated than fourth grade math.
Really?
But it takes a lot of practice, so right. I practiced a bunch, and convinced my wife to take a few $1,000s of our savings, and it worked, and over my career, you know, which was about 3 or 4 years that I was actively playing, I won over 600,000. But then we went on to run a team that won about $4 million, or various blackjack teams that won about $4 million. The most famous team was called the Church Team, and it was featured in a documentary called Holy Rollers, The True Story of Card Counting Christians.
Wow.
So it's on Amazon Prime and various places on
and
the internet.
You're on that, are you?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Me and the guy that I got into card counting with, we ran the team.
Wow. So how does the team work?
Well, you know, in books and movies, it's all this kind of collaborating and people signaling, and we did a little bit of that. But the main reason we ran a team was just joining forces. So you have two other people you do the podcast with, is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Well,
Aaron,
you know.
And John. Hi, Aaron and John. They're so slack. They didn't even come to America with me.
Well, perhaps you partnered with them because you felt like the three of you together could do more than you could do on your own.
Yeah.
Well, same with the card counting team.
Yeah.
Either different people have different amounts they can invest in the, you know, we call card counting investing because we know our calculated returns. And for those who don't know, it is legal.
Yeah. And I'm going to ask you about getting kicked out of casinos.
Yeah. So maybe somebody has more money they can invest and someone else, you know, has more time on their hands or whatever. And even just having someone to be in it with, because it is kind of a lonely thing being in casinos by yourself.
Yeah. And your first, like the very first time you're like, all right, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
Were you nervous?
Oh yeah. And honestly, I'd never even been in a casino before.
Wow.
I didn't gamble, but I just saw how this was an opportunity to make money, have freedom of time. And so I practiced a bunch, went into the casino. I was incredibly nervous, and I'm sure that I screwed up in the first 5 minutes, you know, but I stuck with it, kept practicing, and it worked out.
Yeah. So, okay. So you've got the team. So would there be nights that, okay, well, actually let me step back. You live in Washington State, in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Would the team do like weekends down to the casinos in Las Vegas?
So our larger team played all over the country and a little bit in Canada. But people could play where they wanted, when they wanted.
Yeah.
It's just kind of, you know, it's a lot like maybe day trading, but you have to go to different physical locations to do it. Yeah. And they people ask you at various times, say, "Hey, you're done. You're not allowed to do this anymore."
Oh, here. So the dealer would actually
not the dealer. It would be the pit boss. Yeah. When we first started, it was pretty much all in Washington State until we had enough capital where it made sense to go to other places Las Vegas.
There's casinos in Washington State, is there?
Yeah, so we were just kind of in the right place at the right time. Wow. They have these little kind of mom and pop casinos that were low limits, and so they didn't really even know what we were doing for quite a while. And of the $4 million we won, probably about half of that is from Washington State.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's amazing. And so if there is, so if there's five people playing at a table. And would the team be two members of the team at the one table? How does it practically work?
Not really. Again, it's like an investing pool. Sure. So people just go out and play, and there really isn't much benefit to being at the same table because you could be doing the same thing at separate tables. The thing in the movies is where to kind of throw casinos off, they would have someone
Dummy.
Yeah, and they would be betting small amounts. And then when it gets good, they would signal to someone else who would come in and bet large amounts.
Right,
So we did that. That's called team play. And some of my best memories are of doing that, but it's a little more glamorized in the movies than it really is all that effective and practical.
Yeah. And so is the form, like once you learn, and I'll get you to explain to us about the course that you're running now, but once you learn how to do that, is it almost like a guaranteed formula?
Well,
or is it your own human error may impact you?
Yeah. So, you know, the cool thing about it is that it is a very concrete number of variables.
Sure.
So if your game is perfect, if you have enough capital, if you bet properly, play properly, then if you have enough time, it is guaranteed to work out if you manage your risk.
Yeah.
But
and if they don't kick you off the table.
And even if they do, you just go to the next casino.
Sure. Yeah.
But it's not a guaranteed thing in the short term. So a lot of people think that, a card counter, they walk into a casino with $100 and walk out with $1 million and walk out with $1,000. It doesn't work like that at all.
Yeah.
You go and you quote unquote invest.
Yeah. Yeah.
You play. So it's based on this principle called expected value. And positive expected value means you have the advantage. So it's casinos have positive expected value off of every gambler in the casino.
Sure.
Well, card counters, we have it flipped.
Yeah.
But just like a gambler can get lucky and win on a given day, you know, a card counter could get unlucky. So a card counter wins 60% of the time, loses 40, but you give a card counter 500 hours, 1,000 hours, and they're going to make a good profit.
Yeah. What's the longest stint that you've done at once?
Losing streak? Or
like it's time at a table playing?
I've played 14-hour days, but with a few breaks in there, know. But at the beginning, after half an hour, my brain would hurt, and it would be like, I got to walk away.
Yeah.
And then you get better and better at it. Yeah. But I've pulled 14-hour days.
And what's your biggest, one shift win?
There was a casino and it was in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I won about $50,000 in a couple days. And most of it was on the last day. And I cleared out the it's called the rack, but where all the chips are.
Yeah.
I won every chip in their rack and they said, hold on. And they, on a sticky note, wrote an IOU because they didn't even have, they kept saying, hold on, we can't deal. And I say, well, I might lose, just deal one more hand. And then I won.
Oh.
And then I wrote a sticky note and had to bring more chips in. And
so part of the counting strategy, do you lose a few do winning streaks?
Yeah, the card counter's advantage is so slim that you would never intentionally lose because it's just not worth it. Yeah, it really does work, but it really is a slim margin. And the amount of work that goes into it, you wouldn't want to give the casinos any unnecessary money.
And with your teams, when you were running the teams, was a lot of it based on you had to trust their own character and judgment not to rip the other team members off? Did you have any issues there?
Yeah, that was really tough. And so we didn't start with other card counters. We started with friends of ours.
Sure.
That's why it's called the church team, because it ended up being quite a few of the people ended up being friends we knew just from our network, which
were you
was
giving offerings to the church.
Well, that was up to each individual.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have a team policy of you must tie a percentage or anything. But it was friends from, you know, Bible camp and from church and just friends of ours. But so my point is, we started with friends that we felt like we could trust and we knew, and there was a strong relational component. And then we could train them how to count cards. So we got really good at teaching people card counting because we took people that had never played blackjack before, just like myself. But yeah, it is hard. And yeah, we had some difficult things in there with that many people. Some people, one guy's losing, which every card counter goes through losing streaks. But when someone's really losing, everyone else is saying, well, maybe he's stealing, you know. It's really tough because there's no security camera watch over. I mean, there are security cameras, but casinos have access. We don't have access to that footage.
And you put a slide up the other day of all your different mug shots.
Yeah.
So I might get you to send that to me now.
Sure.
It's pretty funny. So that was, I guess you would get banned from casinos. So talk to me about that. So in the movies, the guy cheating the table, they drag him to the basement. They, you know, the big ugly guy punches him and bruises and he gets thrown out. So how does it work practically? So it's not illegal.
It's not, because you're using your brain, which is still legal in the United States.
I know a few people with an illegal brain.
But yeah, I mean, the beauty of card counting is casinos created the game and they offer the game.
Sure.
And it was actually a mathematician over 50 years ago, and I've met him and he's a really nice guy, but he just kind of looked at the game. He was like, oh, I wonder how it would affect the game if you took a two out of the deck or if you took an ace out of the deck. And he used early computers and analyzed it. It was like, wow, it actually, you take a small card out of the deck and the game becomes advantageous to the player. And so we're playing the game they offer according to the rules that they offer. And it's, you know, I tell people it's kind of like extreme couponing. You know, you could
gaming the game.
Yeah, you could exploit the coupons to a point where the grocery store would say, hey, we're not going to let you do this anymore. Yeah. Well, we're doing the same thing. And yeah, we're gaming their game, which is kind of fun. It's like Robin Hood, you know. Yeah.
So you're at the table. You're on a really hot winning streak. The pit manager's, you know, getting a bit of a tap on the shoulder because maybe someone upstairs is looking down. So how do they approach you?
Yeah, well, I would say the majority of the time they say, my last name's Jones, they'd say, Mr. Jones, your game's too good for us. You're welcome to play any other game in the casino, but no more blackjack. And that's because they know blackjack's the only one I'm going to beat. And then, you know, a small percentage of the time, they'll be a little less kind and they'll say, hey, you're done here. You know, we don't want to see you again or something like that. And you're not breaking a law.
No.
So they do have a right to say.
And I guess you, as part of it, you're not going to stand and make a scene.
Of course. Well, yeah. So I've learned, I mean, I've been doing this a long time. I've learned a lot of tricks along the way, but I always try to diffuse the situation. I say, oh, I'm sorry. I hope I didn't do anything wrong, which they know I didn't do anything wrong. But that just, rather than being like, what are you talking about? You know, that's not going to help. But, you know, then they say, oh, no, you know what you were doing. We can't let you play here. And I say, oh, well, that's a bummer. I was having fun, but okay.
So how do they get a hold of your photo?
So they have all these security cameras in the casino. The cameras are there to protect the players also to make sure they're not getting cheated. But, of course, the casino surveillance, they'll zoom in and snap a picture and then upload it to a database. And a lot of people are really afraid of those. And I always tell people the majority of the money I've made and all my card counter friends have made was after we were in all those data. You know, it maybe slows you down a little bit, but it doesn't stop you.
It might spook a couple of people, I guess.
Yeah.
So they would send it to the local casinos or whatnot.
Yeah, they might. Or they might just keep it for themselves. But I've gone into lots of casinos that have my picture and still played plenty of blackjack.
So how many casinos? So would they say you're banned from the casino?
They could say that. That's pretty rare, but you know, maybe 10% or less. They might say, you know, we have a right to arrest you for trespassing if you come back, which is actually not. There isn't really a court case that says that is true, but they say it to intimidate you. And one of the interesting things with all this is it exposes just kind of how gross casinos are and how they kind of prey on and they just want to extract as much money out of every person as they
can. What's the worst, I guess, so you're sitting with everyday type of players.
Yeah.
Like, have you seen some bad losers? Like, people just getting in over their head?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the time you wouldn't know, but I heard one guy after he won a hand, say, well, I'm glad I didn't lose that because that was my car payment money.
Oh, wow.
Or that was my rent money. You know, yeah. I've heard things like that. And it's like, what are you doing here? Mm-hmm. You know, spending money in casinos is not a good idea to begin with, but spending money you can't afford to lose is tragic.
Yeah. And how many casinos do you think you've played in?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Maybe 300.
Wow.
I'm guessing. Yeah. But.
And what's your, do you have a favorite casino?
Well, unfortunately, all my favorites, I'm not welcome to play in anymore. But I really liked Red Rock Casino in Vegas. It's about half an hour away from the Strip,
and so
it's really beautiful out there, and the rooms are nice. And I don't know, I had a few other favorites, but yeah.
So okay, an example: would you like, because you've retired now, quote unquote?
Yeah.
If you ever took your family on a holiday to Europe or came down to Australia, would you just go and pay for the holiday one night?
Oh, what do you mean?
Go and win.
Well, like I said, there's no guarantee you're going to win in the short term.
Sure.
But if I knew there was a good blackjack game, to me it's an investment.
Yeah.
You know, it's a. And, you know, just like you wouldn't say, I'm going to throw all my money in the stock market to make some money today.
Yeah, sure.
You would never do that.
Yeah.
You'd say, well, I'll put it in the stock market if I have time for it to reach, you know, a return.
Yeah.
But if there's a good, you know, I play enough. I'm, you know, retired,
so, yeah.
But I still play enough for fun that if there's a good game, yeah, I would play it.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Wow. I mean, I'd bring, you know. I'd bring some money, maybe 10 or 20,000 with me and play some blackjack.
That's hilarious. And so what's the difference between, so in Australia they have pontoon.
Okay.
Which it's, maybe
yeah.
You've heard of that? Or?
I've heard of it. I think it is a form of blackjack,
form,
but I've never played it. I'd have to look at the exact rules to see if, you know, we use software for all this stuff to make sure that, you know, we have an advantage and we know how to bet.
And speaking of software, the computerized blackjacks.
Online casinos.
Do they work or are they actually?
No. So I have a video about this on YouTube. They're not rigged, but they.
What's your YouTube site?
It's Blackjack Apprenticeship, which is my business. And
sure.
I think it's YouTube/BJA videos for Blackjack Apprenticeship videos.
Sweet.
But they design those online blackjack games in a way that. It's pretty poor rules. And then on top of that, they shuffle more frequently than they would normally.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, it's just really slow.
Yeah, yeah.
And so part of making money as a card counter is just playing more hands of blackjack. When it's slow, you're just kind of dying.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, like, so you've retired now, you've made some, what were you doing? Like, so you studied at university maths, or math, or whatever you guys call it, mathematics. Did you have a day job? Like you said, you were a teacher.
Well, So I quit my job at the restaurant and then I was substitute teaching.
Sure.
And so I was working maybe 1 or 2 days a week, but
then
pretty soon. And then if I didn't get called in to teach, I would go count cards. And within a few months, I was making a lot more money from card counting. Than substitute
so you've
teaching.
Never had a traditional career?
No, not, nope, I haven't.
Sure. So, okay, so we fast forward today.
Yeah.
You've got the Blackjack Apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm.
It's a website.
Yes.
And you teach people how to invest in blackjack.
Yeah, yeah.
And teach people how to count cards.
Yes.
Legally.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the progression was I played blackjack for a few years, and then I ran a team for a number of years, and then somewhere along the way we said, you know, well, what are we going to do when we're done, you know, running teams? And so we started the website along with other, you know, businesses we tried along the way. But so I run Blackjack Apprenticeship now full time and full time for me, which is about 20 hours a week.
Yeah.
But it's a training resource, it's software, and it's community for card counters.
Great. And so the personal side, so you work 20 hours a week, you've got a wife, Grace, who's with you. At the conference here?
She had to leave this morning.
Oh, really?
She was with me. Yeah. She's got to get back to the kids.
Yeah. And how many kids do you
have? We have 6 kids.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
And so you spend a lot of time with the kids.
Yes.
And so the Blackjack Apprenticeship is your main source of income for the family now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So talk to me about, so, you know, we chatted very briefly while I was making this delicious coffee.
Uh-huh.
Because so we're recording this, if you're not watching the video or you're listening to the podcast, in my hotel room in Florida, in Orlando, and there's just no good coffee around.
So yeah.
I got a $6 grinder from a thrift store in Ohio. I got some coffee from the Roosevelt Cafe that they roasted, and I bought an AeroPress, so we made some coffee.
It's delicious.
Yeah, I'm loving it.
Yeah.
And so we were chatting that it's basically, even when you're counting cards as your income, you're running a business, and you've still got the same principles as somebody who's working and earning the income.
Yes.
It just means your income's coming from somewhere else.
Yeah.
So we fast forward today, like, have you paid off your house? Are you debt free? What's your personal situation?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a great question. So, I mean, a few things that I've, card counting, it's interesting, but to me, it really just provided a couple of things. One is, once it started to work, I realized there is a way to live where work serves kind of my values, which is my family and my faith, rather than my family and my faith having to fit around
a nine to five.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with a 9-to-5, but I, you know, much more than the money, I cared about that freedom. And so I've always pursued how to have work for my family.
Yeah.
So, so we bought a house 13 years ago and we worked hard to pay it off. We paid it off 3 or 4 years ago.
Sure. How old are you now?
38.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
So we bought it pretty young and just, you know, put as much extra money towards it as seemed reasonable until we paid that off. And we also never had debt.
Yeah.
So we were very fortunate to start. I didn't have any student loans. We had our, you know, we still don't have nice cars, but they're paid off. And we've always lived below our income level.
Sure.
Because again, the point wasn't to have lots of money and spend lots of money, but to, you know, have that money work as a resource for our family to pursue the things that matter to us.
Sure. So are you, like, what's your current financial goal as a family? Is it saving for the kids' college?
Yeah. So there are really kind of three buckets in my mind. The first is our, you know, kind of monthly burn rate.
Yeah.
How much we need just to exist.
Yeah.
And then the second is giving. And so we're committed to a few things. I was telling you about when we weren't recording that my parents built a feeding center in Guatemala and we give to that every month. We give to a organization in India every month. And then we've gotten more and more involved the last couple of years in trying to provide resources to help stop child sex trafficking. But giving is, you know, and then the rest is like goes towards the future, which is I've got 5 daughters, so I may be paying for as many as.
What's their ages?
My youngest is 2.
Wow.
I have a 2-year-old, 4-year-old, 6-year-old, 8-year-old, and 10-year-old daughters.
So in about 5 years, you're going to need a bigger house.
Yeah. We're already looking around a little bit, thinking about that. But you know, weddings for my daughters.
Yeah.
You know, I would like to either pay for at least a year of college or university or provide, you know, if they have the wisdom for it, say, hey, here's the money for a down payment on a house or to start your first business or something like that. And then, of course, we don't want to be a financial burden on our kids. So thinking about our future in that way. And if our finances grow, then that's more to give and more to put towards.
It's funny because a lot of people say to me, oh, you know, what should I do with my money? And you do exactly what I do. Give some, save some, spend some.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe if you're not doing those three things, you're out of balance.
Yeah.
And,
yes.
You know, and I'd encourage anyone listening, like, if you're not giving to a charity, what about you just research or, and it doesn't have to be a lot, just start.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talked about the human trafficking and with the kids. I support a charity called the A21 campaign. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing. I think human trafficking is like one of slavery is the biggest issue in the world at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, it hasn't ever stopped.
Yeah. It's just heartbreaking.
Totally.
I cannot imagine if my children, you know, couldn't be free.
Totally. It's just nuts. So,
But I agree with you as far as giving. I mean, studies show that people that give are happier than people who don't.
Wow.
People that are generous are happier. And we could think, well, I can't afford to be. But if you're thinking about, you know, the direction you're going in life, can you afford not to give, you know?
Well, it's and it's a shameless plug for my spending plan course that I've got online.
Yeah.
Where basically you have to work out, like you said before, what it costs to exist.
Yeah.
And then once you know how much it costs to exist, set up the systems in place and that takes care of itself.
Yeah.
And a lot of people go, I can't afford it. But it's like, well, you can.
Yeah.
You just don't have a good cash flow system in place.
Yes. And I found it's a lot easier to cut expenses than to make more. And and again, you know, maybe your course does this, but getting people to step back and say, at the end of the day, you know, when I die, what do I want to say my life went towards?
Sure.
You know, there's that saying of no one's tombstone is going to say, I drove a nice BMW.
Yeah.
You know, like who cares?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you want to say like I made an impact or I showed love to the people that matter to me. And so finding a way to align with those goals now will be worth
it. And I guess that stuff feeds into what's your life, why, or what do you want to do.
Yeah.
It can start to lead away from. And then I think if you're listening to this and you haven't heard any other ones, we did an episode, I think it's episode 120 on side hustles.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe start to do something you're passionate about on the side.
Because
there's never been a better time to make money online.
It's amazing the opportunities now.
Yeah, like it's just crazy. So, okay, well, talk to me about your... actually, I want to ask you one more question. And I'm going to swing back around to your online course.
Sure.
So that money that you're investing, are you capping out your 401k, which is...
I don't have a 401k. There's no internet business 401k. I mean, there are some opportunities. And I'll be talking to my accountant about it again this year to see what our best opportunities
so
are.
So, for example, for those listening, 401k in the States is like the Australian super or superannuation, where the rules in Australia are if you're within a certain age, if you're under 65, you can open a super account.
Okay.
And you can put up to $25,000 a year in pre-tax.
Uh-huh.
So, what are you doing with your investing, or are you just saving to get the girls done? Or
So I'm personally more, I care more about real estate.
Sure.
I've done some things in the past and I kind of felt like, you know, for me personally, I want to invest in things I feel invested in.
Yeah, sure.
And so personally, I'm not really interested in stocks and things like that because I just don't know how to feel invested in it.
Yeah.
Real estate, you know, I can say, hey, I can actually, you know, see this thing. I could potentially make it more beautiful or things like that. So we're saving towards our next investment property.
So you save up and buy them with cash?
I mean, I'll use a mortgage.
Sure.
As long as it cash flows.
Sure.
If it cash flows, you know,
you
should be okay at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's cool. So your online course, talk to me about that. So I guess if anyone's listening who wants to go down to Crown Casino in Melbourne or up to the Star in Sydney or the one in Brisbane is called the... I forget what it's called. Oh, I forget. Anyway, it's a casino. There's not many casinos in Australia.
Yeah, there's not a lot. And you have to make sure that they don't use what's called a continuous shuffle machine where after every few hands, they take the cards and put it back in this machine and shuffles them all.
I think they do.
Some of them do at the lower limit tables. Sure. And usually at the higher limit tables, they don't.
It's more raw.
Because people tend to not like those machines. Mm. But, you know, so don't play a continuous shuffle machine. But if you've got, you know, the money to invest in card counting, you know, feel free to check out our website. Otherwise, you know, don't give the casinos your money.
Yeah. So the website is...
blackjackapprenticeship.com.
Yeah. And how much is the online course?
There's different tiers, but the main one is $250 for the year.
Oh, perfect.
And you can renew, you know, you can cancel at any time. But that includes video course, it includes training drills, it includes access to a forum, which I'm on, and a lot of other professional card counters, and you can ask questions.
Wow.
It involves some betting software and some members-only podcasts, and we have also a software that is the playing conditions of all the casinos in the U.S. and some in Canada. And
wow.
if we have a few Australian members of our website, and so, you know, we'd love to add those casinos to it.
So yeah, if that tickles your fancy and you're interested in games, what about, and this is totally random, the best game at the casino, other, like, the most chance it's craps, is it?
If you bet it properly.
Yeah, like, I went up to, there's a casino in Columbus, Ohio called Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
Have you been there?
No, but I know about
it. It's only quite new, actually.
Yeah.
It's like a cemetery on a weeknight. It's really sad. Mm. And I think they put the junior dealers on a weeknight because there was some mistakes made.
Yeah.
But my friend was showing me how to play craps.
Uh-huh.
And I've just found, like, it was actually a fun game.
Okay.
And you got a lot more time.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, you could just, like, $40 and you could have a good little game. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, craps, if you know how to bet it, which would be... to before they set the number to play the pass line and you know the maximum odds on it. There are websites where you can find out the best
it's
odds
so
of casino
funny
games.
Like, seven's the unlucky number.
Yeah.
Anyway, I said, so what's like with the number seven or something? And I was like, no, don't. Like,
yeah,
people are superstitious.
Very superstitious. Gambler logic is really amazing. There can be very smart people, they step into a casino and it's like their brains turn off and they get superstitious. And
It's so funny. Like, all you need to do is walk through the slot machines and, like, these people, it's like, because it's the dopamine release.
Yeah.
It's like they're not even happy. They're just on the drug.
Yeah.
And
it really is a drug.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's just nuts.
So they've done studies that they used to consider gambling addiction to be a compulsion, not an addiction. And then they studied the brain and found that gambling addiction affects your brain the same way hardcore drugs do.
Wow.
So
did you see the Louis Theroux, he's the British documentary guy. He did a documentary on Vegas.
No, I didn't.
And like...
I should watch it.
Yeah, it's nuts. Like, there's these people, they've got all this money in the world and like, you don't need to win money. So they're not there to...
Yeah.
It's just a habit. It's like, it's just amazing.
It's an escape. Yeah. And anything can be an escape. Spending can be an escape. Food can be an escape. Alcohol can be an escape.
Well, I escaped to food and spending a bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're all looking for things to maybe numb ourselves or to make, you know, the just the pain and the confusion of life not as painful. And, you know, I really think people should dig into those things and find... Really, it's in vulnerability and community that we can... you know, deal with those difficult things in the best way.
Yeah, wow.
That's what we're made for.
Well, thank you so much. And
yeah.
If you want to Google Colin Jones, Card County.
There's actually an Australian musician named Colin Jones.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
But yeah, Colin Jones Blackjack or something that, you'll find me.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye-bye.
Any advice in this podcast is of a general nature only and has not been tailored to your personal circumstances. Please seek personal advice prior to acting on this information. Before making a decision to acquire a financial product, you should obtain and read the product disclosure statement relating to that product. Opinions constitute our judgment at the time of issue and are subject to change. Neither the licensee, any of the National Australia Group of Companies, nor their employees or directors give any warranty of accuracy, nor accept any responsibility for errors or omissions in this podcast. Glenn James, Urban Get Up Approach Limited, trading as Sort Your Money Out, are authorized representatives of Apogee Financial Planning Limited, AFSL 230689.